He's falling into the same problem. You see, we always fall into this mistake of identifying with our mind, and then we realize our mind is absorbed in some real nescience, and we become distressed by this. How could I be thinking of such nonsense? And how do I reform? Again, like I was saying yesterday, we gird ourselves for battle. I'm going to defeat this mind. I'm going to finally become determined. But this is being tricked by Maya, because we are not the mind at all. The mind is just a subtle level of material nature. And in days to come, we're going to be going into that more in great detail from Bhagavatam. But now we're still speaking more generally. We can compare the mind to a lens, like in a telescope. You have a telescope and you have this two lenses of glass. So when you look through a telescope, you can look at the moon on a clear night, full moon. And if it's a good, powerful telescope, you can see details on the surface of the moon. In other words, this telescope brings you very close, in a sense, to the moon. You can see craters, you can see different features. In actual fact, you're not close to the moon, but it's the lenses of the telescope that are bringing you near. In your consciousness, you're brought near. So the mind is like that. The mind is like a subtle lens which brings us close to gross matter. You see, we feel ourselves in the material world. You see, like Prabhupada said, you go out there, you ask anyone, who are you? And they will answer that question all in terms of the body. Because their consciousness, or in other words, the mind, has brought them close to this body, brought them right into this body. Ask them, where do you live? They'll give some address here in Stockholm or Sweden. So it is by the subtle mind that our consciousness has become absorbed in gross matter. So mind is just a subtle level of material energy. And our mistake, Prabhupada warns us that the problem we have with the mind is actually the false ego. It's the false ego that trips us up. We identify with the mind, that is me. And then furthermore, through the mind, we identify with matter. And we become so convinced of this. We become so convinced, again, as I was trying to tell you before, that our perceptions, what we perceive, what we know, that is actual fact. This whole world is going under this. Science, the education, is all going on under this conception. But when, in actual fact, when one becomes very analytical and looks at what we know, looks at what we're perceiving through the senses and understanding in the mind, it all becomes shadows, it all becomes uncertain. You see? So this is, again, mental plane. What it means to be on the mental plane. So the mind is not us. The sense objects are not us. And if we get involved in this struggle, you know, how to separate our mind, you know, which we think is us, from the sense objects, we're actually being deviated from our real Krishna consciousness. Real Krishna consciousness is, as explained here by this Hamsa avatar, the only entity that is really out there is Krishna and his energies. And the mind and the sense objects are also within Krishna's energies. And they're separate from us. They're different from us as spirit soul. So it is by this false identity, again, false ego, ahamkara, that we become involved in mind and sense objects, thinking that that is us. So everybody relates to Krishna only. Srila Prabhupada writes, I'll read some interesting statements by Srila Prabhupada. One should understand, this is from Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Lila. One should understand through the transparent medium of the spiritual master that the Supreme Lord exists everywhere in his transcendental spiritual nature, and that the living entity's relationships with the Lord are directly and indirectly existing everywhere, even in this material world. Again, I want to stress this point of relationship, because we're so much driven by this relationship. All of our problems are coming out of relationship. And our attachments, what are they? Simply products of relationship. Everyone in this world, what are they doing? They're looking for that relationship in capital letters, you know, looking for that one whom I can love, who will really understand me, whom I can share my heart with. So, Prabhupada, I want to repeat this again. One should understand through the transparent medium of the spiritual master that the Supreme Lord exists everywhere in his transcendental spiritual nature, and that the living entity's relationship with the Lord are directly and indirectly existing everywhere, even in this material world. So we're only relating with Krishna. In the spiritual world, there are five kinds of relationship with the Supreme Lord: Santa, Dasya, Sakya, Vatsalya, and Madhura. The perverted reflections of these rasas are found in the material world. Land, home, furniture, and other inert material objects are related in Shanta, or in the neutral and silent sense, whereas servants work in the Dasya relationship. The reciprocation between friends is called Sakya. The affection of a parent for a child is known as Vatsalya, and the affairs of conjugal love constitute Madhura. These five relationships in the material world are distorted reflections of the original pure sentiments, which should be understood and perfected in relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead under the guidance of a bona fide spiritual master. In the material world, the perverted rasas bring frustration. If these rasas are re-established with Lord Krishna, the result is eternal blissful life. So, if there's any question in anyone's mind still, are mind and sense objects real? Because this is a point that comes up in the Srimad Bhagavatam. It comes up, for example, it comes up in the discussion between Devahuti and Kapila Dev. Again, due to false ego, the conditioned human mind has this tendency, this foolish tendency, to assume when we discover by experience that there's really nothing for us here in the material world, that these perceptions are illusory. When we hear from the Shastra in particular that this is explained, that we are not the mind, we are not the sense objects, we are not this body, then there's this foolish tendency to come to the Mayavadi conclusion that all of this is therefore not real. You see? It's all just, this is the fox and the grapes. Prabhupada, in India, it's the jackal and the grapes, but otherwise the story is the same. First the fox is jumping up to try to seize this very tasty looking, luscious, big grapes hanging above his head. And he's leaping up, up, up with great energy, but can't quite get them. And then, finally he becomes tired and frustrated. And so to save his self-image, he says, they're sour anyway. You see? So this is egoism. And he stalks off. They're sour anyway. So he rejects them, in other words. There's nothing there. They're sour. They're useless, worthless. So this is another form of the same ignorance. You see? So to dispel this spook, philosophical spook that may be haunting us, if I couldn't enjoy this, then forget it. It's all nonsense. It has no value whatsoever. It's all worthless. Let us hear some verses spoken by Sri Prahlad Maharaj. O Supreme Lord, this is from Canto 7, Chapter 9, verses 48. and 31. O Supreme Lord, you are actually the air, the earth, fire, sky, and water. You are the objects of sense perception, the life airs, the five senses, the mind, consciousness, and false ego. Indeed, you are everything subtle and gross. The material elements and anything expressed either by the words or the mind are nothing but you. My dear Lord, Supreme Personality of Godhead, the entire cosmic creation is caused by you, and the cosmic manifestation is an effect of your energy. Although the entire cosmos is but you alone, you keep yourself aloof from it. The conception of mine and yours is certainly a type of illusion, Maya, because everything is an emanation from you and is therefore not different from you. Indeed, the cosmic manifestation is non-different from you, and the annihilation is also caused by you. This relationship between your lordship and the cosmos is illustrated by the example of the seed and the tree, or the subtle cause and the gross manifestation. I think another very useful example to help us understand the relationship between the Lord and His creation is given by Srila Prabhupada. He gave the example of him speaking and it being recorded by a tape recorder. So the source of the lecture that we hear on a tape of Srila Prabhupada speaking is Srila Prabhupada. But at the same time, there's a difference between that lecture that Prabhupada that is put on the tape and Prabhupada himself. We can't ask the tape questions and get answers to our questions. You know, you're listening to a tape and at the end you raise your hand and ask the tape players, Srila Prabhupada, what did you mean when you said such and such? And the tape is not going to answer you. So the source of the lecture is obviously Srila Prabhupada, but still there's a difference. This mysterious Achincha Bheda Bheda Tattva, simultaneous, inconceivable oneness and difference. So similarly, everything is Krishna. All this, as Prahlad Maharaj is saying, the earth, fire, sky and water, air, all of this is simply Krishna. But it is his Bina Prakriti, separated nature. So there's also a difference. So because there's a difference, we may fall again into this mistake of false ego. Prahlad Maharaj says, the conception of mine and yours is certainly a type of illusion, Maya, because everything is an emanation from you. So this is where Maya begins. It's not that the earth, water, fire, air, sky, mind, intelligence, false ego, this cosmic manifestation is illusion, is non-existing. That is Krishna and his energies. But what is illusion is when we think it is mine. When the false ego steps in and we lay claim, this is my mind, or this is I mind, this mind is myself, or this body is myself. That is illusion. So this conception of the mind as upadi, designation of the soul, that is wrong. That is the mistake. So, I wanted to say, it's now after 7, so I wanted to say something about this, more about this world as the combination of the Lord and his energy. In the 6th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, there's some very beautiful verses describing the Lord and his consort. Lakshmi Narayan or Radha and Krishna, they're non-different. So Mother Lakshmi, who is here, is the reservoir of all spiritual qualities, whereas you manifest and enjoy all these qualities. Indeed, you are actually the enjoyer of everything. You live as the super soul of all living entities, and the goddess of fortune is the form of their body, senses and minds. She also has a holy name and form, whereas you are the support of all such names and forms and the cause for their manifestation. So in these verses from Canto 6, Chapter 19, this is one of them. There's a series, very beautiful and interesting verses. It is revealed to us that this, what we are perceiving is actually the Lord and his consort together. But we're only perceiving dimly their energetic manifestation, as is stated here. That what are these bodies that we have? They're actually the energy of Goddess Lakshmi or Radharani. And these bodies are given. What is her purpose in granting this energy to us? So she is the foremost servant of the Lord. So the reason she is giving us her energy in the form of bodies and minds is to give us the opportunity to serve Krishna. That is the actual purpose of why we have a body and a mind. So then if we use the body and mind under her intention, the intention of the Lord's consort, then we will be able to perceive the eternal presence of the Lord and his consort, Sri Sri Radha and Krishna, and enter into relationship, loving relationship of devotional service with them. But again, because of what? Because of false ego, we make a different decision. And thus these energies, you see, there's another verse in this section describing, if I can remember it, anyway, it's too far away from me right now. But anyway, the verse is explaining that the external energy, the Maya Shakti, is none other than a form of the internal potency. The same Lakshmi or Radharani is also the Maya Shakti. So you see, this body and mind are working against us now. They're causing us problem now. Why? Because we have taken this decision not to serve Krishna. Actually, this is the meaning. Actually, as the Vedas say, Sarvam Kalvidam Brahma, everything is spiritual. Everything is actually spiritual. It only appears material because our intention is not to serve and love Krishna. So our body and mind is originally spiritual energy, spiritual nature, but is now working against us because of our wrong choice. So if we rectify our choice, we, instead of choosing to be demons, we choose to be devotees, then we will realize the actual spiritual essence of even what we call matter. This matter is actually also spirit, because it is simply the energy of the Lord engaged in the Lord's service. So, yes, another thing I wanted to make a point, because the main point we're talking about in this seminar today is about the mental plane. So this, I don't want to get into a lot of detail here, but I have here in front of me verses and purports in which there are three states of consciousness explained to arise from the three modes of material nature. So out of sattva guna, we experience what's called jagrata, the waking state. And now I hope we're all awake here. So this waking state that we're sharing is symptomatic of the mode of goodness. It is a state of consciousness that is arising from the sattva guna. Then there is a state called svapna, which means dreaming. And you all know what that is. So that is arising from the mode of passion. And then there's a state called susupti, which is the dreamless sleep, the deep sleep as it is known. And this is tamoguna. So the interesting point that is made in these verses and purports, which I've collected here, is that human consciousness, we're talking about our human mental plane, our existence on this mental plane, the human consciousness is assigned not to Jagrata, as you might expect, but to Svapna. Because the human being is a being who is mostly in the mode of passion. As human nature is passionate. We are more passionate than other creatures. The animals, they're more in ignorance. We are more passionate. The demigods are in the mode of goodness. So, and we'll be talking about this in days to come, that these states of consciousness, it's very interesting. These states of consciousness they're predominant in different regions of the universe. So it's the demigods who are actually they're really realizing the waking state. What it means to really be awake is known to the demigods because they're in the mode of goodness. We're in the mode of passion. So the interesting thing is that even when a human being is so-called awake, he's still dreaming. And that I think you can understand that in a few seconds. Because of course, you're all very nice, saintly persons, but if you can just imagine what's going on in the minds of people in this city as they're walking, you know, just go outside in this interesting place, this Govinda's restaurant, because you can see through the windows the bus stop right in front. You see all this passionate activity. People, you look at their faces. They're preoccupied, you see. Look at the faces of people as they're walking. They're walking down the street, but their minds are somewhere else, isn't it? They've got different voices playing in their minds, you know. They're replaying conversations they had, or they're making plans, or, you know, whatever. They have so many things going on in their mind. This is human nature. This is the human level of consciousness. What does that mean? That means they're not really awake to what's actually there around them. They're living in a dream. You see, they're mostly inside their own heads. And this is the nature of the mode of passion. This is what the mode of passion does. Mode of passion is a mode of plan-making, scheming, visualizing, you know, futures. This is what one does in the mode of passion. In the mode of goodness, you are... I hate to quote this title, but there was one book that became big when I was a new devotee, Be Here Now, written by some Mayavadi guy. But actually that is the mode of goodness, to be here now, to be actually here now, aware. But it means aware, for example, that I am not this body, I am spirit soul, here in this body now. And to see things as they are. To see the world as the creation of the Lord. But in the mode of passion, one is absorbed in the mind. All the scheming, plan-making, dreams, hatreds, you know, all these mental things. And one is mainly involved in that. And that's mainly what human consciousness is about, you see. So this is why it is said that human level of awareness is svapna. Even when we're awake, not you, me, you're all great souls, but... Even when I'm awake, I'm dreaming. This is true about human beings. So this is, and it's a passionate dream. We're in the mode of passion. So it's a passionate dream. It's very, very, very much pushed by emotions. Again, seeking relationships. Seeking that dream lover. There's so many songs with that phrase. Be my dream lover. So in actual fact, as we heard from Srila Prabhupada, this is all based ultimately on our original identity. There is a topmost relationship and a topmost attachment. We hear in verses in the Srimad Bhagavatam, I have them right here, from 10th canto, verses again which are using this word anonya, other, meaning relationship. But let's hear them. Translation: each day they arose at dawn, calling out to one another, anonya, calling out to one another by name, They all held hands and loudly sang the glories of Krishna while going to the Kalindi to take their bath. This is a verse describing the gopis' activities. So the gopis arise in the morning and they take one another's hands, and seeing the glories of Krishna, they go to take bath in the Jamuna River. Such a beautiful scene. And this is what is going on in the spiritual world in Goloka Vrindavan. Another verse. And then again with the word Anonya in it. There on the Jamuna's banks, Lord Govinda then began the pastime of the Rasa dance in the company of those jewels among women, the faithful gopis, who joyfully linked their arms together. You see? So this is spiritual, this is transcendental. This is the original nature of the soul to be in this relationship. But having passed into this passionate dream. Now there's another reason why I'm stressing this dream state. Because always the question comes. Hearing this explanation, someone is bound to ask the question, well, if that is our original state, then how did we end up here? You see? Well, this is another thing that Prabhupada insisted we cannot actually understand. We have to accept that because, again, because of being in this mental plane right now. This is something we have to learn to see from transcendental point of view. So, if our present state of consciousness is like a dream, you know, to dream you must sleep. And sleep is a state of consciousness. We enter that state of consciousness every day or every night. You see, within 24 hours, all of us pass from wakefulness into sleep. Now, if I were to ask you, maybe someone here wants to ask me, how did the living entity pass from the spiritual world to the material world, fall down in his consciousness? But if I were to ask you, how do you fall asleep at night? Would you be able to tell me? Would you be able to tell me how you pass from wakefulness to sleep? Nobody can say that. All we know is we're awake and then we suddenly hear the alarm ringing and we're in our bed getting up after having slept for a few hours. So if we cannot understand how we pass from wakefulness into sleep, then how are we going to understand how we come from the consciousness of Krishna's pastimes to this material world? So therefore Prabhupada said, don't worry yourself with this question. The question that we have to deal with is, how do we get out of this state of sleeping and dreaming that we're in now? How do we wake up from this? And this is the process of Krishna consciousness. So our dreams, yes, the dreams we have at night, they're based on our daily waking experiences. As I explained yesterday, the mind combines them in different ways, these experiences. But ultimately what we dream, we've experienced before. So similarly, this dream of this material existence that we're having is based on the spiritual reality of Krishna's pastimes in Goloka Vrindavan. So we must become awake to that. And that is why we chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Alright then, I'm going to stop here. It's 7:30. And tomorrow we're going to begin really getting into the details of the mind, the desires of the mind, the structure of the mind, what is the subconscious, many, many different topics, and that will take us several days to go through. So does anyone have a question? Yes? If one is crooked-minded, how can one become simple? Yes, well, we have to become sincere. And sincere means to be honest, actually. It is sometimes said that the English word sincere comes from Latin, sincera, which means without wax. It is said that in the days when they were building up Rome and they were bringing marble in from the quarries, that some clever stone salesmen were taking broken pieces of marble, cracked pieces of marble, and covering the cracks with wax, you see? So white marble, when you pour wax on it, the wax also looks like marble and fills the crack. And then buildings were being built with this cracked marble, and when the sun came out and melted the wax, all the cracks appeared. And so then the city government of Rome, they passed a regulation that there has to be inspectors. They inspect the marble before it is purchased, and they have to give a certificate. Sincera, without wax. And so it is said, this story may not be true, but anyway, it still serves as a nice explanation of what sincere means. So therefore it is said that the word sincere comes from this. So whether it does or not, but this is nicely helping us to understand what the word sincere means. It means without duplicity, without trying to cover up. Like, for example, if a feast is served, a very nice prasadam feast, very tasty preparations, and one is sitting down among devotees, and prasadam is served in front of one. And naturally, one prasadam is very attractive, and you're also hungry, you're also very hungry. So it is honest and sincere simply to take prasad to your heart's content, even if that means calling out for seconds or thirds, you see? That's being straightforward. And of course, someone may kind of laugh, oh, you're eating a lot, you know, but it's prasada, it's all right. But someone who is kapatya, crooked-minded, he's thinking, I don't want to embarrass myself in front of these devotees. I want them to know that I'm very austere in sense control. So although he's feeling hunger, he wants to eat more, he deliberately eats less. He eats only what's half on the plate. I've had enough, Prabhu. And goes away, you see, inside feeling very unsatisfied. But externally making a show that I'm a yogi. Now, this is not sincere. This is not honest. You see, one is not being as one actually is. So we should not be embarrassed. We should be whatever we are by our nature, but be that for Krishna. This is the idea of Srila Prabhupada, how he started this movement. Not that we put on some big show, making a little drama of being so advanced. That's not at all required, and in fact that is displeasing. So rather be what you are, even if that means, as I say, that may be in a little bit of object of joke for others, but better to be what you are simply, but try to be that for Krishna. This is what Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says. There's this discussion between Lord Chaitanya and Ramananda Roy. And Lord Chaitanya asked Ramananda Roy, please explain to me what is the goal of life. And so Ramananda Roy proposed different, we're quoting verses. And Mahaprabhu said, that's external, you can say more. Until Ramananda Roy quoted one verse from Lord Brahma, which begins Gyane Prayasham Udapasyanamanta Eva Jivanti Sanmukaratam. How does that go? Stane Stita Shrutikatan Ban Manobir. Yes, that's the second line. So Stane Stita. Stane Stita means be in your position. whatever you are. Don't try, but gyane prayasu means give up the speculative approach. So this plan making, scheming, you see, trying to promote ourselves by our own, you see, schemes. That, all right, I may be a Shudra, but I'm going to turn myself into a Brahmana, you know, by adopting certain mode of behavior. And in this way, people will think I'm advanced. But this verse says, Jnane Priyasha, give that up. Give up this speculative, scheming approach. Stane Stita, and be satisfied with what you are. Be in that position. But Shruti Gatan Van Manobir, in that position, you hear about Krishna. Hear about Krishna, chant Krishna's holy name, serve Krishna. You see? Because when you're Stane Stita, in your natural position, then that's where you're most satisfied. If one is trying to make a show that I'm very advanced, something that I'm not, then again, talking about psychology, this is putting ourselves under unnecessary mental strain. We're just making unnecessary problems for ourselves. So why do that? Krishna consciousness is hard enough as it is. So why increase the problem by acting in some false way? So the answer to the question is, we should be sincere, we should be honest about what we are and act that way, but for Krishna. Yes? What is Sanatana Dharma? So Sanatana means eternal. So it's the Dharma that's always there, in other words. According to different ages, different forms of Dharma come and go. So there was an age in Satyuga, that was the age for yoga, dhyana, meditation, sitting down and meditating upon Paramatman, the heart. And this process, you see, in the Satyuga people's average lifespan is 100,000 years. And to become perfect in this dhyana, this meditation upon Paramatma, required at least 60,000 of those 100,000 years. One had to meditate for at least 60,000 years to realize Paramatma. So obviously nobody lives 60,000 years now, or 100,000 years, or, you know, many people don't even live 60 years or 100 years. So obviously this Dharma has passed on. It is not current for now. So Sanatana Dharma means the Dharma that's always there, the essential Dharma. And that is the Dharma of Bhakti, devotional service. Of course, you can do this meditation as devotion to Krishna. That's a form of it. But the essential principle of devoting oneself to Krishna, that is Sanatana, that is eternal. That is there in all ages, you see. Now, in this age, we chant our... Of course, the chanting of the Lord's holy name is also always there, even in other ages. It's not that it's only in Kali Yuga, but in Kali Yuga, it becomes the only process that works. In other ages, you had these other things that would work, and therefore are known as the Yuga Dharmas. But now in Kali Yuga, only Harinam works. And Harinam is the essential expression of Bhakti. So Bhakti is Sanatana. In the spiritual world, Bhakti is always going on. Bhakti constitutes the relationship of Krishna's devotees to Krishna. So that is eternal. Okay. All right, well. Anything else? Yes.
Suffering with the mind,
Yeah. Okay, but you see, I intend to explain that more in sessions to come, because that's exactly, I'm following a step-by-step pattern. So today I introduced this as a general idea, and as in the days that follow, I'm going to get very specific. Pranada Prabhu, he asked this question yesterday, and in the answer I said that the mind, the Bhagavatam version is that the mind is an energy of the Lord, and this energy is manifest at the level of cosmic creation. We will see in days to come that basically when we talk of this cosmic manifestation, we're talking about something that is mental. Mostly the cosmic manifestation is subtle, for the most part, and we'll actually give evidence of that. This material level, physical level, this is like the last stage, you see. Mostly what is happening is subtle. So mostly when we talk of the universe, we're talking mostly about a mental manifestation. And this is manifest by the Lord himself as Paramatma Purusha Avatar in his pastime of creation. And Prabhupada says this body, this is a small universe. So whatever is there in the great universe is also here, duplicated, reproduced. So we are going to go into some detail about this creative manifestation. And by understanding this, we'll be able to understand the structure of our own mind, what actually makes up the mind, and how the mind works in relationship to intelligence and sense objects and even time and things like that. Anything else? Yes? Okay, you didn't ask it. Do we have? Yes, as I told you yesterday, that mind, there is an original mind, and that is pure consciousness. Consciousness is the light of the soul, the light of awareness of the soul. So, the basic power of knowledge of the living entity is consciousness. And that is the original mind. So that original consciousness is nirguna. It is free from the influence of the modes of nature. So when our consciousness comes under the control of the three modes of material nature, then this thing we call the material mind is manifest. You see, that's when consciousness is working under the control of the modes. So mind is, I explained yesterday, is said to be a product of the mode of goodness. Intelligence is a product of the mode of passion. And false ego is a product of the mode of ignorance. So the subtle body is all three. So actually in our subtle body, all three modes of nature are there. But mind is originally in the mode of goodness. But in material consciousness, you see, we take shelter of the false ego, and also of the material intelligence, which is our, you know, giving direction how to accomplish things in this world, accomplish our goals of sense gratification. So by taking shelter of the false ego and the material intelligence, we take shelter of the tamoguna and the rajoguna, and they become more and more prominent, you see. So mind as a thing of the mode of goodness, speaking of the material mind, but in its more pure state, like the Vedas describe, that the universe as a whole, just after creation, is very pure. Just after it's created, it's very sattvic. And so the living entities are, all living entities, even those in the lower forms of life, are very exalted, you see. Even the animals in those days, like you see, if you see in the Ramayana and such literatures of ancient times, even the animals could talk, and human beings could talk with the animals. So things were much more exalted because the mode of goodness was more prominent. But now this is Kali Yuga, so Rajoguna, Tamoguna is very more prominent than the mode of goodness. So anyway, my point is, in the mind, even the material mind, in its more pure original state, as a thing of the mode of goodness, that is also not so bad. Because it was that mind that the yogis used for their meditation. That mind can be very, without much trouble, engaged in spiritual activities, because it is of the nature of goodness. But now in Kali Yuga, the mind has been dragged down deeply into the lower modes. So it's more difficult. But anyway, the original mind, the spiritual mind, is nirguna. It is of the nature of Vasudev Sattva. It is uncontaminated goodness or uncontaminated spirituality.